Hi, this is Margaret Scott, the first female writer in Transformers comics, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Who in the pits of Kahon is that?
And then he came right at me, and I... Well, come on, Mok. Come at me.
I don't want to hurt you, Rat.
I said, come at me!
What was that?
You have competition, Bulk. I'm a bit stronger than I used to be. Also a bit faster. Think you can take me, Muscle Car? Wimp. How's it humming?
Did he just...
Stronger, faster, studlier.
Dude, what are you waiting for? Go with!
Scrap.
You know, I've always thought that children were surprisingly unprofessional. Just in general.
Well, that would make Ender a 33-year-old child.
I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
Oh, will my torment never end?
Welcome to the Pull Bag. I am one of your hosts, TFG1 Mike, and joining me is Ender. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon, morning, whatever it is. Wherever you're listening, you have a good one of those.
Yes, yes, exactly. And we are here to do yet another Pull Bag interview. The first one I did was with Kyle Higgins, writer of Nightwing over there at DC Comics. And now we have... Oh, boy. We have the first paid... female Transformers comics writer, Margaret Scott, with us. Hello, Margaret. How are you?
Hi, guys. I'm doing good.
A wise man once said that what every artist truly wants in their heart of hearts is to be paid.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And for those of you that don't know, Margaret is one of the writers on Transformers Prime Beast Hunters, the new ongoing series from IDW. Based on the Prime Universe and the Dinobots and Shockwave and Dead Insecticons. Oh, boy. There's a wanted poster with your picture on it, isn't there?
Only in an Insecticon hive somewhere.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, honestly, I've seen a lot of Season 3, and I'm feeling pretty safe.
Yeah, we won't ask if there's anything you can tell us, because I automatically know the answer is no. Anyway, but we are here to primarily talk about the comic. Outside of what you're doing with the Prime cartoon and the Prime comic, are there any other upcoming projects you have in the future going on that you can reveal?
Oh, gosh. It's so unfortunate that you asked that right now, but I'm hoping to have some announcements at Comic-Con that I'll be able to reveal more. But there is more stuff in the works that I'm very, very excited about. So.
Awesome.
Okay, sorry. I had a technical problem there, in case anyone noticed.
you are a technical
I am a technical problem. You know, you hire the guy to be loud, and then he doesn't say anything. so, yeah, Kidlet Doom. Anyway, so before I embarrass myself for the next half an hour, I would like the official tutorial on how to say your first name properly.
Oh, sure. It's no problem. It's Margred.
Mayor Gred. See, you were wrong, Mike. Mayor Gred, right? Mayor Gred? Is that it? Am I saying it right?
Mayor Gred?
Mayor Gred.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Yeah, it's an interesting name. Is there a particular like history or story behind it, or your parents just like the sound of it?
It's the Scottish version of Margaret, and my last name is Scott, which is really boring, so I guess they felt like they had to jazz up the first name then.
Yeah, I got one of those last names you can't say, so.
Exactly. You know, yeah. I don't feel bad, though, because Jeff Klein, the EP on the TV show for Transformers Prime, he just refused to call me by my first name for, like, the first two seasons. So he only calls me by my middle name. And
you are echoing.
You have a middle name?
Yeah, yeah.
is that something you share with the public? Or?
Sure. My middle name is Wild, W-I-L-D.
Awesome. See, you like made out on the name front because you got the short last name, but you know your name is. I always figure, especially middle names, have to be interesting because they're only good for, you know, small talk on first dates. So you know.
Exactly. I think he just enjoyed shouting "Wild" across the office.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. Hey, my son's middle name is Magnus. My daughter's middle name is Titania, and. Yeah, so we go for the interesting ones there.
Oh, nice.
I often wonder how his wife allowed him to get away with naming their child Magnus.
Alexander Magnus, Adela Titania, and Leia Desdemona.
That's very cool. See, I mean, you've got at least two Shakespeare characters. I don't remember Magnus, but...
He's very ultra.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, actually, my name isn't even as interesting as that. It's just my mother's last name. But in my family, you don't change your name when you get married. So your last name becomes your kid's middle name. So my kids, I hope they're boys because their middle name's going to be Scott.
both my daughters have a family middle name that was passed down from my wife's side, which is Lawrence. And then my son's second middle name is Luis. I had two middle names. So we gave all the kids two middle names. We're trying to maximize that small talk. So we that's what we're going for there. Shakespeare and some Transformers and some – our kids are – yeah.
That's a play I want to see, the transforming Shakespeare of Star Wars.
Well, you know, Transformers actually remind me a lot of Shakespeare in a lot of ways, you know? I mean, like, whose soliloquy is like Starscream?
Yeah, that's true.
That guy can just go. Like, he is.
Shakespearean characters like to talk to themselves.
If Iago turned into a jet, he'd be Starscream.
There we go.
All right. So tell us about your background. Where are you from and all that beginning early stuff?
Sure. I guess where I'm from, I'm originally grew up right outside of Detroit. And I went to school for dramatic writing, and I ended up having a lot of really good teachers there who taught animation writing, including Charlie Rubin and Joe Kelly from Man of Action. And it really got me excited to write animation. So I moved out to Los Angeles, threw everything in the back of a, you know, 2000 Saturn, and drove out here, got a couple production jobs, was able to come on Transformers Prime, pitch my first story. I was like, hey, you guys, I've got this really amazing idea for a Transformers episode. And they were like, no, that's not a good idea. And I was like, well, I have this other really amazing idea for a Transformers episode. And they're like, no, we don't really like that. And I was like, well, what if I hook Ratchet on steroids? And they were like, oh, good, I like that.
What were the other ideas? Let's hear the other ideas.
Yeah.
I don't even remember. I'm sure they were like,
come on, you remember.
No, I'm sure they were overly complicated, like the Transformers, something with space and time or something like that. That's the one thing when you graduate with a writing degree is your first stories are always like way overly complex, you know?
Back to Future 2, except the DeLorean transformed. Right.
Exactly. And then, you know, throw in like, oh, this has got a real Hemingway feel. And you're like, what? But no, then I started writing on the television side, and I read a lot of, I like to say, shows that solve problems with bloodless violence, and then I moved into comics.
Feeling Energon is kind of like blood, but...
Yeah, but, you know, not if you're BS&P, so that's what counts.
Right. As long as it makes a clang sound when they hit each other, it's all fair.
Clang? Did you clang?
Yeah, right. So, what kind of shows did you watch when you were a kid? Like, what media were you interested in? Did you watch Transformers? Did you watch – what were you into?
Well, it's actually really funny because I kind of – I grew up with Batman the Animated Series and the X-Men, 90s X-Men. and Beast Wars, and it's funny, as a kid I actually never read comic books because I just sort of wandered into a comic book store and tried to get into 90s X-Men, and I was like, issue 397, I don't even know what's going on.
That's exactly the same way I felt until the new 52 reset almost everything.
Exactly. So I kept watching all of, you know, all the wonderful comic book characters on television, but then I didn't actually start reading comics till like the end of high school and into college. So it's been kind of really a lovely thing to experience, you know, all these different characters sort of in their original medium as I grow up. It's a nice way of sort of looking back to your childhood without actually having to watch the shows you watched as a child. You know, I really love Sailor Moon. She touches my heart, but I watched the old episodes again and it's like, ah, oh, I forgot the hairdryer monster fight. That's a lot more deep when I was 7.
Wow. Oh boy. What made you want to become a writer? Was there something when you were younger? Was it because you read books and were like, oh, I'd like to do this someday? What's the story behind becoming a writer?
Well, I came from, this is going to sound awful. I came from a super writery, literary family. My mother was she's a small town journalist and she's a professional grammarian. And so we were always telling stories and, you know, writing stories and stuff in the household. But my biggest problem was that, at least compared to her, I have terrible grammar. So I started doing sort of dramatic writing, like movies and plays, because I could always use the excuse, well, that's how people talk.
That sounds so familiar.
And then I love animation because I would just get so bored writing. You know, the few times I've tried to write sort of the standard cop procedural or something like that, it's like, oh gosh, now we're going to stand around in a room and talk about all the interesting things that happened in some other room. I was like, someone turn into a jet. And so I went to animation.
Wow. So our research indicates that despite being a comic book and television writer, that you are, in fact, not a dude. What's up with that?
Exactly. Much to the surprise of many people. I've actually, you would not believe how many things I've shown up to where my little placard says, Mr. Scott.
Wow.
But no, I'm not a dude at all. It was very tempting to become a dude. But I decided not.
What's that been like in the industry that's, you know, kind of dude-filled in some ways, at least in perception?
You know, it's a really weird thing to have sort of been a fan girl and then a fan professional, especially in sort of the early 2000s and like up till today. Because I remember when I first started reading comics, it was still a thing where I would go into a comic book store and literally a good percentage of the store would follow me from aisle to aisle. As you know,
so basically it's like that episode of The Big Bang Theory when they finally take Penny to the comic book store and half the guys in the comic book store just pass out. Oh my God, a girl.
Yeah, no, literally I had that, and I've been to comic book stores where it was basically you had to sort of, it's, you remember that scene in Monty Python, Holy Grail, Answer Me These Questions 3. It was like you had to answer 3 Green Lantern Silver Age trivia questions before you could buy your comics.
I'd have had trouble with that.
I know. But, you know, it's funny. Once I actually got into the industry side of things, it was something that people were really aware of, and it was something that I was always sort of warned against. But so far, at least, it's not happened to me. I've not experienced that. You know, maybe I've been really lucky to work with the people that I've worked with, but by and large, you know, Hasbro's been really good to me. No one's ever told me you have to write this because you're the girl, or, you know, we really don't want like a female viewpoint on this. And IDW has been fantastic. It's just sort of never been an issue. I wonder, part of that is just as a writer, it really doesn't matter what you look like. You're just a typed name on an email, you know? So it's interesting.
Well, in reverse, do you see when you, like, they're saying that, you know, they haven't asked you to do anything just because, you know, you're the girl, as you say, do you, they don't want a female perspective, or that, do you look at the status quo sometimes and think, though, like, that it's really lacking in said perspective and they don't even realize it, or?
Well, I think that there's definitely, look, I mean, comic books are a really cool medium, and I've always been of the opinion that comic books are for everyone, that you just haven't found the comic that you like yet. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I really think that comic books should sort of be as diverse as the world that they live in. And clearly they're not. They're not fully there yet. We've gotten a lot better. But yeah, you know, it's one of those things where you just have to take it sort of one story at a time and one character at a time, and you write, you know, a good enough story for a character. And who thought 20 years ago that Spider-Woman would be the cornerstone of a giant Marvel event, or that Squirrel Girl would be a huge fan favorite, or that Captain Marvel the Third would sell so many t-shirts? But they do. So you just sort of have to, over time, make that the new normal.
Excellent.
Let's talk about some Transformers Prime stuff. Did Hasbro put a call out? Did the Hub put a call out saying, hey, we're looking for writers? Or how did you get to be a writer on the show itself?
Oh, yeah. Well, basically it was that when I got, I had a day job on the show, which is the script coordinator, or the writer's assistant. That's my title on Prime. They're two different things in live action, but they're basically the same thing in animation. And the job was to be in the room every day taking notes and researching all the continuity. You know, it would be a thing where it's like, Margaret, we need three Transformers that look like sharks, you know, or that look like jets, or who would be a Transformer who, you know, is super into math or something like that. And it's like, oh, okay, I'll go do that research. And you just start, it's a natural progression to becoming a professional writer. It's just sort of a job that, you know, is the first step for most professional writers, because eventually at some point they turn to you and say, well, do you have any ideas for stories? And you pitch out your ideas until one hits.
See, I'm interested in that, in your role there as the writer's assistant. You said that's your title, correct?
Yes, that is my...
So, I mean, it sounds to me like in that capacity, you actually had some hand in a great deal of the show, not just the episodes you wrote.
Yeah, well, I got to see... It's sort of been really lucky for me to do so much writing on a show that I also worked production on, because I can, as a freelance writer, they give you, you know, however much material they have. You have, you know, a week to write your outline. You have 2 weeks to write your first draft. You have a week to write your second draft. And then maybe you'll be invited to the record. That's it. The script, you know, here's your check. Goodbye. And a year later, you'll see it on TV. But working in production, I was really able to see the scripts at every single stage and all the changes that went through. And so it really was a great, essentially a great place to start. It put me on a really firm ground with the show, because I knew exactly what had happened before and I knew what was going to happen afterwards. So it helped me really position some, I think, some really cool stories.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the, and would you say that you feel like, was it solely learning experience, or were you really kind of, you know, do you think there's your imprint is probably a bit of everywhere? It sounds more likely to me.
Well, I don't want to take more credit. I do think that I've been really fortunate. I've been really fortunate in the sense that Dwayne, who is the head writer on the show, has always taken sort of a best idea wins approach. And so there are, you know, lots of ideas that I throw out there, but that everyone sort of throws out there. and I know I had sort of special side projects. I definitely took Miko very close to my heart and really fought to sort of develop her as much as possible. But those aren't things that would have gotten through just on my effort alone. You know, everything on Prime is really a team effort, and I'm really happy that I was part of that team.
Awesome. Well, you know, it's funny you bring up Miko, because that was actually the next thing I was going to ask you about. At the inception of the show, there was a lot of, you know, fan derision about her, maybe, you know, being ignoric or, you know, manic or annoying. But she changed a lot over the series, but never so much as when you were writing her. In the course of episodes you wrote, Miko, let's see, go down the list, kills Hardshell, is declared a wrecker, and by chain of command is literally beating up Decepticons. So tell us about Miko and your relationship with her. Like, tell us how you approached that, because you seem to have a real effect on that part of the show.
Yeah, well, I think in some ways I really identified with Miko on a personal level. Not just because I was also the youngest woman in the room, but the fact that, you know, Miko really wants to be, I always joke that Miko really wants to be 22 with a Gatling gun, like strapped to Bulkhead's roof, shooting down Decepticons. Like, she wants to be Sarah Connor.
And when does that comic come out?
I know, exactly. Someday, issue 127, TFB Sunners.
I'd say issue 11 or 12
at later. This rate.
Well, that'll be a question later, but go ahead.
Exactly. But, you know, she was a character that I knew she was going to be an extraordinary woman when she was in an adult, but she's 14 now. And so I was like, well, I want to really see her sort of become competent. Because on the other hand, I really liked Miko because as a writer, she's not a character that I see a lot, which is essentially a woman who fails and gets back up. A lot of times women are sort of the exposition characters, or they're the intelligence characters, or they're the more the RC thing, where they're kind of uber competent. And I really liked that Miko was, she's kind of a screw up, you know, but that does not bother her or hold her back at all. And I kind of wanted to reward her for essentially staying in there as long as she did.
Well, at the start of the series, I mean, she really drives a lot of the plot, just in terms of, you know, let's jump through the space bridge into a giant robot-filled battle. You know what I mean? And it seems crazy, but if you think about it, too, the story wouldn't go anywhere if she didn't do it most of the time. But it was really nice to see her evolve in the way that you did it, especially to such a level, because, you know, I think for my daughters, you know, seeing her there, seeing a little, you know, it's not just a female character, it's a little girl, and she's welcome in that world. And it was really gratifying to see her not only be welcome in that world, but respected in it. And that way, I feel like, you know, it makes it inclusive for my daughters as well, you know, which a lot of shows don't manage. So thank you for that.
I have to say really quickly, when I watch Chain of Command, and spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, it's been out for about 2 or 3 weeks now. When I watch Chain of Command, I nearly fell out of my chair. Because as soon as she started staring at that Apex armor thing, I knew it was going to be a G1 exosuit reference. I knew it as soon as it happened.
Fell out of your chair. I was on the edge of my freaking seat because I was writing Chain of Command, I think a little bit after Hurt came out. And I thought Hurt was like, it's one of my favorite episodes I've ever written, if not my favorite episode. And I thought fans, like, oh, fans are going to love this. And the boards hated it. You know,
really?
They were so mad at me for, you know, it was basically like, I hate Miko even more for taking up this valuable screen time. And so I was writing Chain of Command, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to give this one last shot. Like, you will like Miko.
No, but I swear it was like, as I was watching Chain of Command, I literally saw, even though it's not that character or that situation, I in my brain,
Transformers the movie was playing, and it's Daniel. Come on, transform, transform. I swear, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, exosuit, so awesome. And I'm sorry, no offense to a lot of the more competent people on the boards. Some of those people on the boards are just crazy, because a lot of them don't, a lot of Transformers fans in general don't like humans. And I have said from day one, Jack, Miko, and Raph are the three best humans in Transformers cartoon history. They just are. They're the best written, the best character development we've ever had. That's my opinion, and I'm going to stick to it. But it's like, when I saw, every time that you all as the writers or the animators or whoever, you know, takes care of it, every time I see a reference to, like, just even in some of the scripts and some of the lines, like Megatron's looking for a Beast Machine soldier, I'm like, oh, that's so cool. You know? And it's like, it's just, it's so good.
My favorite's the Bantor reference when Ratchet's drunk. Or when he's coming out of it. He's coming out of, like, anesthesia.
Yeah. I remember.
I put a tiger in his tank. Yeah, exactly.
I have a Bantor.
You know, it is absolutely fine for me, people who don't want humans in the Transformers mythos. That's just, you know, it's like how everyone has the Batman that they grew up with. And either your Batman is, you know, the Adam West Batman, or your Batman is the Frank Miller Batman. And those are not the same Batman. But it is a special victory when you get a fan commenting that they didn't like the humans or didn't see their value, and then you were sort of able to help them see that value. And honestly, I think the humans are, they're not really there for the 30-year-old fan. They're there for the kid, because, you know, when I watched X-Men, like, I loved Jubilee because she was, you know, slightly older than me, and I wanted to someday wake up and get my mutant powers and go have fun with the X-Men. So the kids are there for kids watching the show to think that, you know, maybe the car next to them is going to transform and turn into their robot friend. So,
yeah, I think whenever you remove the humans from it, technically it doesn't have to be humans. I mean, they could be protecting badgers to some degree, but if you don't have those secondary characters for the Autobots to protect, it robs the Autobots of a lot of purpose and agency, and you kind of wonder what they're all shooting at each other over.
Well, I think it's more that it definitely, I think the good thing I like about humans as a writer is that they just are able to lighten the tone a lot. You know, it's always hard to lighten the tone of essentially a million years long civil war that annihilated a planet.
That's again to Miko's testament in the very first episode of the show. Dude, what are you waiting for? Go with scrap.
Right. Exactly. I really see that as the appropriate response. If you see a car, I'm gonna get in trouble from like VSMP, but small children, if a car transforms into a robot and invites you on an adventure across the galaxy, the answer is yes. Go live that life. I can't deal with reluctant heroes.
I always liked Miko better than Jack, because Jack, I found a little on the dull side and couldn't quite see what he was doing there a lot of the time. Miko was like right out in the adventure. I feel like if Jack had his way, the whole show would have been about him cooking French fries.
In his defense, though, in real life, Jack would probably live quite a bit longer than Miko.
This is true, yeah. He probably would have survived that first afternoon, as opposed to what really would. People would say, you know, she was, you know, I think she's crazy. They're like, no, she's a serious mental condition, okay? This is like a death wish in the first couple of episodes. It was just like,
here, well, you know, different strokes.
Yeah, but let's see, where are we going? Yeah, again, you know, she's the big favorite around here in my house right now. And I, you know, no matter how many times I tell my daughter this, that it's not important, I know she finds the 7-foot-high boys sign that hangs above the Transformers toys slightly off-putting.
Yeah.
And, you know, can't imagine why. So, for you, did you have, you know, similar experiences when you were a kid with toys and franchises you were interested in that maybe, like, didn't seem interested in you? And how does that inform how you approach the things you write today?
I mean, yeah, I guess I did. I remember that, you know, because when I was little, the things that you would pretend to be was X-Men and Power Rangers. And there was always a fight whenever you played Power Rangers over who had to be the pink Power Ranger. Because all the girls wanted to be the yellow Power Ranger. She was the good one. She, you know, she did stuff. Pink Power Ranger just sort of flew around, I don't know, being pink. And that was, like, very upsetting to me that, like, I was not going to be the pink Power Ranger.
See, I have the opposite opinion.
Oh, see, Trini, you were a pink Power Ranger fan? Trini Fly?
Trini didn't do anything. She sat back with Billy tinkering. That's all she ever did.
Well, no, you no. and my, you know, third grade self can go dig that out. yeah, but no, it was, and I remember especially there was, it was a really big deal when Jean Grey became Phoenix. Because before that, and this is just me looking back as a small child, the feeling was that basically Jean Grey couldn't do anything until sort of they needed her to be able to do something, and then she could do it, and then she would, like, pass out. And that was really annoying, and, like, no one wanted to be, none of the little girls wanted to be Jean Grey. Everyone wanted to be Storm, everyone wanted to be Rogue, no one wanted to be Jean Grey. And I was always made to be Jean Grey, and I remember the day that Jean Grey became Phoenix, and then it's like, now I own you. And there was much revenge reaped on the playground that day.
Was there always some little boy who was playing Cyclops who would chase you around and yell, "Jean!" over and over
again? You know, I don't remember that, but I do remember there was always, like, there was always the kid that was, like, Wolverine, and he was like, "Well, nothing you do can hurt me," or, like, Magneto, another, whoever was Magneto was always a tool. And was just like, "Why levitate everyone with the iron in your blood?" Like...
Wolverine's not a tool. Wolverine's just a emo old man stalker. That's what he is.
Magneto's a tool. That kid was probably me.
Yeah.
And the Green Power Ranger, whoever wanted to be the Green Power Ranger, was always like, "It's the me show," which I'm sure is what people thought of when I was Phoenix, but Green Power Ranger was always like, "It's me time now."
That's pretty much gone on for the last 20 years. I mean... Green, white, red, and black. He's been all the colors. He's the most power. He's not the most powerful, most popular Power Ranger in the last 20 years of the history of the American version.
Well, don't tell my husband, because my husband's name is Jason, which was the name of the red Power Ranger that we grew up with. And he's still upset when the Green Power Ranger showed up. Like, he's still mad about it.
Real name, the actor's real name is Jason, so there you go. Good old Jason David Frank. Oh, boy.
I've seen like two episodes of Power Rangers, so you kind of lose me there. But
yeah, Ender's an 80s kid. He checked out in the 90s.
I think I just missed it. Like, I was excited when the ads came on for Power Rangers because I thought it looked cool, and I watched like two episodes and was like, I don't know about that. That was
I mean, I haven't watched it since I was a child, so honestly, we probably know about the same amount.
That's probably healthy.
Well, I guess that makes me the sad person in this group since I've watched almost every single episode of all the series.
Well, I didn't want to be the one to say it, but...
Yeah, you jerk.
So. Notice how quiet Mirgrid's being.
Yes, exactly.
This is my version of tact.
This is my version of tact.
So, BondCon was this past weekend, and IDW revealed that the Beast Hunters comic will be in two-issue story arcs. So, I love that. I think that's great. It's almost like it's a weekly television show that you have to keep coming back for. I think that's an amazing way to approach a comic.
That's, thanks. Well, it was, you know, we did it for two reasons. One, it allowed us to write more comics simultaneously, which since Mike is writing a bunch of comics and since I still write animation, has allowed us to sort of stockpile a lot of issues so we right. can keep writing it. But also, we just really wanted Beast Hunters, because it was tied in the TV show, to be a comic that would be a really good intro comic to new readers, or as good as we can make it. Because I love R.I.D., and I love More Than Meets the Eye. But when I tell people, you know, like, "Oh, you got to read More Than Meets the Eye," it's like, you know, "Oh, okay, well, you want to start, you know, 20 issues ago." And... And it's perfect because it's such a great story. There's so much laid out in it, and it's so complex and wonderful. But we really wanted something where the sort of motto we were going with is all you have to know is that they are robots that turn into things. Everything else we will explain.
Yes, and that's pretty much one line. One Twitter message from Ender basically made me go back and get the three volumes for More Than Meets the Eye. He said something about, I will never be able to see Shockwave in the same way again. I had to go back and I had to get all the volumes, blah, blah, blah. All right, so also revealed is that the comic will link up with the cartoon around issue 6 or 7. Can you reveal anything without spoiling everything?
The comic will link up with the cartoon around issue 6 and 7.
Come on!
Okay, so this was really... The challenge that we had was that Hasbro both loved Rage of the Dinobots and Hasbro mm-hmm. loved Transformers Prime, the TV show, and they wanted both in a comic. And obviously, at least up to this point, there are no Dinobots in Transformers Prime, the TV show. And mm-hmm. also, if you've watched season 3, there's not really a lot of gaps where you're like, oh, and they also did this. The Autobots pretty much don't also do anything in season 3. It is a shot from right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And so we decided, well, let's take the Dinobots and let's say it's basically set at the same time as season 3, but it's set on Cybertron instead of on Earth. And so we're really trying to build up the Dinobots as a team and as characters so that when they meet up with the Prime characters, who we assume our readers already know and love, they're not just going to feel tacked on. It's really going to be two teams colliding and sort of having to having equal weight. So it's definitely going to be when the shows do come together, it's going to be a very sort of brave new world for our characters.
Yeah, because the way I thought of it really quickly was that I thought that because the show is ending and we don't know what the next new iteration will be, the best way to keep it continuing is to have the Earthbound characters go into the comic. That would make more sense to me because of the fact that, as you just said, the Dinobot stuff takes place on Cybertron. We've only seen a portion of Cybertron in the show. That's a huge friggin' planet. You know, where they found Shockwave lying half dead, you know, could be one section, and the Dinobots are over, you know, in Asia or something. I don't know.
Exactly. Well, if you, not to spoil the first few issues, but the Dinobots are, you know, 3 miles underground. So
Yes, see, that's the thing. They're not even on the planet's surface, so it makes sense to bring the show characters into the comic once, sadly, the show goes away. All right, now we're going to hear from one of Ender's kidlets.
Yep. I was watching Chain of Command earlier today, and my daughter was watching with me, and we discussed this coming interview, and she would like to ask you a few questions.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, my name's Leia.
Hi, Leia. I'm Margaret.
Can I ask you some questions?
Sure.
Okay. How does Miko fit into the Egg Peck's armor? I never found that out. That was so confusing.
Okay, so Miko, you know, she jumps on the Apex armor and it sort of makes itself around her. But, you know, it sort of changes how tall it is based on whoever is in it. So remember when Starscream was in it and when he was fighting Optimus and he was like as big as Optimus? And so when Miko gets in it, she's just a little shorter than Starscream. So it just becomes whatever size, you know, the person that's in it is. It just makes them bigger.
What makes Miko so, courageous?
I think Miko is like every little kid out there and knows that there is actually a lot more, to be had out of life than grown-ups think. Everything that I regret about my life is something I didn't do, not something I did do. And I think Miko, like a lot of little kids, is ready to get out there and go after the world and not think that the world is going to be a big, scary place.
Okay, so here's the last question. Where did RC learn her ninja skills?
Well, RC learned her ninja skills during the war because she was, you know, there were a lot of Autobots fighting. And she was a soldier too, and she fought a lot of people. And then as the Autobots lost and they got lost, she was Optimus's right hand for a really long time. And so, you know, Optimus is a really good fighter, and so RC is a really good fighter.
Miko and RC are my favorite characters in Transformers Prime. Thank you for making them so kick-ass.
Thank you for liking them. They're my favorite, too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And that was Leia in there. Yeah.
I'm always so much more nervous talking to kids than I am to adults. I'm like, oh, don't screw this up. No, seriously, every time I like try and talk to a little kid and it's like, oh, hey, little kid, you're playing with a Transformers toy. Do you like Transformers? Yeah. You know, I write that show. What? Hey, look, I can stand on my head. And it's like, wow, you're not impressed at all. Or you'll be like, do you like Transformers Prime? Nope. And they walk away.
Well, I told her I was interviewing a writer of the show, and she's like, okay. And I was like, she wrote the one where Miko got in the armor and kicked Starscream's ass. She was like, oh, really? Like, that woke her up. So.
Exactly. Kids are brutally honest, man.
Yeah, so I was lucky in that way that, you know, we were interviewing somebody who wrote her favorite episodes, because, you know, if you hadn't, I don't know, if you'd wrote a... I don't know. I don't want to cite any other episode, but that isn't as great. But that could have gone sour. But so. She's wanted to express her appreciation and ask you and interview you like daddy, you know.
No, that's great. That's great because, you know, I mean, that's why we write the show. So there's a whole nother generation of kids who will like Transformers as much as we do.
Yep, exactly. See, I keep telling you, Ender, Prime is this generation's G1.
Yeah, I keep hearing that. I've heard that before.
You know, it's true. I mean, I grew up on Beast Wars. I actually never saw Optimus turn into a truck until the Michael Bay films.
I will say, the doing the Prime resurrection thing at the beginning of season 3 again does more solidify that, because I think it is some of what makes G1 G1 is actually the horrible Prime death trauma. It's almost when I say that's not this generation's G1, it's partially because I'm not sure being this generation's G1 is a compliment sometimes, because you got to remember, we really solidified that in, like, you know, all these 5-year-olds' minds at the time, that, like, the death grip that will never be released was leaving the movie theater bawling their eyes out because Hasbro made a critical mistake with their franchise.
You know, so. You are the first person in the history of my writing to say that my writing is not traumatic enough. do you think should we be more traumatic?
No. I'm pointing out that though it worked out in the end for them, it did kill the franchise for a while in the middle. It was only
but you remember it.
Yeah, well, they, you know, once in therapy in the 90s, they could bring it when everyone was, you know, they could bring it back when everybody was remembering their horrible doom. But you don't want it to be that dramatic. My suggestion is not that yours isn't dramatic enough, believe me. But
watching dramatic?
Bulkhead walk off down that hallway, all gimpy, was I was like, oh my god, this is a kid show.
You know. You should have seen it when I screened Stronger Faster for my friends. I was like, hey everyone, it's my first TV show episode, and I screened it for them, and they were like, oh my god. Is this a kids show?
Right.
And I was like, they're like, you tortured someone. And I was like, I'm not the first episode to do that in our series. I'm not falling on that sword.
Not my fault. Not my fault. Well, and also the drug use, I suppose, was a little thematic. But
that's true. But I mean, you know, he realizes it's bad in the end. Like, it's a very special episode of Transformers Prime.
I have never seen Ratchet. Okay, we saw in G1 that Megatron and the Decepticons got drunk on Energon in one of the, is it season 2 episodes? I think it's Micro. Yeah. And, you know, we see that. But I don't think I've ever seen a Transformer like Ratchet on drugs. It was so cool. I love that episode. Thanks. And I think, isn't this the first episode we actually see his alt mode in action?
It is one of his first action-packed episodes. We were looking, because I remember I wrote it specifically because we wanted an episode that featured each of the characters, and we were like, well, what's the episode that's going to feature Ratchet? But, you know, it's funny, I know we can be accused of getting a little dark, but I actually think that that's one of the things I'm kind of proudest of in the show, is that I would much prefer that if you're going to have characters talk about being in a war, that you teach kids that being in a war is not necessarily a happy, fun thing.
Yeah.
And while there are things, you know, we obviously want to shelter children from, I would much prefer kids to know that, you know, people get hurt in war. And when you hurt people, like, the whole point of hurt is, you know, Miko's so upset and she goes off to get revenge, and revenge doesn't solve the problem. And I think that's actually a much more valuable lesson than sort of pretending that they're not really hurting anyone, or that, you know, actions don't have consequences.
Yeah.
It's very true.
Very true.
You've introduced the Transformers to the world of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Exactly. Exactly. And of course, only as much as we can. I mean, Bulkhead does recover, like, the next episode. Like, I think he's, like, takes him, like, 3 or 4 episodes to recover. But in cartoon times, that's forever.
My favorite line from Bulkhead is still when they're arguing. I think it's Ryan Pax Part 2. I think it's, I don't know, it's one of them parts. It's after Optimus becomes his former self. And RC is like, you're pretty good at stating the obvious, Bulk. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us? Nothing I can say in front of the children.
Yeah.
I love that line.
Although it's funny, because actually my favorite moment, well, one of my favorite moments, it was also from that episode, which doesn't get a lot of press, but I really loved the moment where Fowler's trying to convince the Decepticons that everything's okay at the base. And he asks, you know, the Han Solo line, the how are you? But because no one cares about Breakdown, it actually works. Like, Breakdown is so star for... That's sort of the character I least developed, is I've always given Breakdown essentially this unrequited yearning for emotional connection. Breakdown's so happy that someone cares about him that he actually answers.
It's like, Breakdown. Aww. Poor Breakdown.
Well, when you're partnered with Knockout, you got to imagine that you are not the center of the show.
Especially with Darren Norris voicing Knockout. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Knockout.
It's so hard for me now, because just recently, I don't know why, maybe it's because there's nothing ever on in the afternoons, I will flip to Nickelodeon, and I've been watching Fairly Odd Parents, and I can just see Knockout's face on Cosmo's body, because they're both voiced by Darren, and it's like, oh, God.
Is there, you know, maybe you'll know this, is there... The name Knockout, I always look at Knockout, and he's colored just like Dead End, and he hangs out with Breakdown, but he's Knockout. Was there, like, a legal reason he couldn't be Dead End, or he was just always Knockout, or?
Gosh, you know, I don't actually remember. I know that it was very important to us that he was Vane, and that we really liked that about the name Knockout, because essentially we thought of him, if Ratchet is an EMT, that Knockout's a plastic surgeon.
Right.
And so that was really, we really enjoyed that, but I don't know if there was something like why we specifically couldn't name him Dead End, or if we pursued the name Dead End at all. I just know that we really liked the name Knockout.
So kind of transitioning really quickly here back to the comic. In the first 2 issues, we've seen that after Rage of the Dinobots, Grimlock's basically a lost leader. He's just... doom and gloom sitting on his throne. And honestly, for me, what I loved about Rage of the Dinobots, and what I love about so far in the ongoing, is that outside of certain parts of Rage where it does focus on Grimlock, the rest of the stuff has nothing to do with him. Thank you. Finally, somebody is paying attention to the other Dinobots, and it's not just me, Grimlock, in the spotlight.
Yeah, well, I didn't want it to become like Grimlock and Friends, you know? I actually really liked the other Dinobots, and especially as I was writing Rage, it occurred to me that I would try and think of who the other Dinobots were, you know, as you're writing them, and I'm like, oh, Sludge is actually the only sort of emotionally balanced one of the group. Like, Sludge really doesn't have a lot of issues. And then I got to the end of Rage, and I was like, wait a minute, Sledge was left for dead, like, twice. Like, yeah. You don't just walk away from that, okay?
Yeah, I was really excited to see Sledge, because I enjoyed the game a lot, but unfortunately he was kind of a wall sconce in it.
Yes, he was, and Jazz was a jerk. But I was joking with my friends that if I ever do bring Jazz into the comics, it will just be for, like, one panel where Jazz will, like, get off, you know, the spaceship and be like, hey, everybody, I'm back. And Sledge will just punch him across the face. Just never see Jazz again.
I think a lot of us were like, yes, they're actually calling back to finding out what the hell happened to Sledge and how he's still alive. Yay!
Yeah, that's definitely the thing. You know, it's one of the hard things when you're writing... Well, when you're writing anything, but when you're writing a miniseries in particular, is that, you know, the number one thing about a miniseries is it has to be a good story on its own. So Mike and I, you know, we were already talking about all these other stories, but if there's not a natural place to put that, you know, then I'd rather leave it out than have, like, a really awkward thing where they're climbing up to the prison and Sledge is like, you know, this reminds me of being left to die in the thing. it's funny because I actually get a lot of fans about, like, in issue 1 and 2, you know, we don't really learn a lot about Airwave and his backstory. And part of that was because the fact that there was just no good place for Airwave to tell his backstory. But it's not that he doesn't have one.
Right. I thought it played, but...
No, it played very well. Did he transform into an Earth Jet on purpose?
His jet ended up being a little more Earth-shaped than we... He transformed into a jet. Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people have been, oh, how is he going to transform into an Earth jet when he's never been to Earth that we know of?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a fair critique.
Well, yeah. It's that kind of thing happens, I feel like, to some degree. It's just a... That's Transformers hazard. I don't know. It's like when Swerve was too tall and More Than Meets the Eye a few issues back. <You know>? Yeah. You're not a mini-bot anymore.
Exactly. But Airwave is actually a really good example of the kind of writing that I like to do, because if you know anything about Airwave, you're like, oh my god, it's Airwave. What's a Decepticon doing in the middle of this base, you know? But if you don't know anything about Airwave, you're fine too. It just adds an extra layer if you know something about Airwave.
So I
really want to be able to include more of that kind of thing to sort of suggest a bigger world. And yes, Airwave was a Decepticon. He did not become an Autobot. He clearly, by the end of issue 2, I think everyone would agree that he did not have a kind of change of heart and become a good person.
He
sort of realized that a Decepticon is not going to live as long with a bunch of Autobot prisoners as a fellow Autobot is.
Yeah. Oh, but no, I'm just loving the direction of the, like, I cannot wait. I've heard several podcasts, and I know this. What I love about IDW specifically is that they offer three covers. Three or four covers for almost every book they ever put out, specifically to Transformers. And I love the idea, and I don't know if they're going to continue it past, I think they told me on Twitter it's either going to stick through issue 3 or 4. It might not go past that. But for those of us who add the title Transformers Prime Beast Hunters to our comic pull list at our comic shops, IDW sends us, same price as the regular cover, a subscription cover with animation art on it from the show. And I absolutely love that. I think that's great. That's cool. Yes, it is kind of a lie because RC has nothing to do with issue 2. But
I know, I feel so conflicted, but it's such a cool RC image.
It's such a cool RC image. And it was such a cool Starscream image. And I know for a fact what the next two are. I went on comiclist.com and I found the sub covers. Issue 3, spoilers for anyone that doesn't want to know, fast forward a couple minutes. Issue 3, according to comiclist.com, is going to be Soundwave, and issue 4 is going to be Megatron.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't know about issue 4, but Soundwave. Yeah, the Soundwave one looks totally bad, eh? Like...
Yeah, it does. It looks... And again, it's for us, you know, granted, you know, a mom and her kid or Ender... and his son that may actually just go into the shop and just pick up the regular cover, that's fine. There's a purpose for a subscription cover. It's for those of us who have a subscription. It's for those. It's something extra for us that hold on to the book, and I don't mind it because I obviously know Transformers Prime Beast Hunters to this point is about the Dinobots, the Insecticons, however of them may be dead, however many of them may be dead, you know. And for me, I think it's cool. I think it's great. I'm actually going to mail mine to Simile Montano and have her sign it.
I was excited too to see in terms of, you're talking about the characters you've added in. Like I was really excited to see Firestar again, who's nobody's used since the 80s. And it was fun too because, you know, as we were discussing before with the sort of attitudes towards things, that it was nice to see an IDW Transformers comic with a female Transformer in it, if only to disprove Simon Furman's theory that, like, suspension of disbelief will come crashing down and no one will read the comics anymore if you have female Transformers.
Well, you know, they've always been female Transformers in the Prime continuity, you know, right back to Solus Prime. So I love the Fembots, and I totally want to bring them back. I make no qualms about that, and no one's stopped me so far, so.
Well, good on you, because it's, well, it really, I find it, at this point, a little offensive in the you know, the IDW continuity, the idea of how they're treating Fembots, frankly. Because, the notion that removes them is Simon Furman saying, well, there needs to be a reason for there to be female Transformers, which makes me think he's probably not married. but beyond that, I mean, it's the same reason they have fingers and eyes and, you know, they're anthropomorphized us, and disincluding half of us is extremely crappy just on the surface of it. But the one throwaway they have is they have Arcee, who I think it was Andy Schmidt who described as like, yeah, she's like a Frankenstein monster. And it's like, yeah, right. That's what women are. All right. We're all normal and they're Frankenstein monsters. It was just such a horrible message that they put out there. Not to mention, it turns the Transformers into the Smurfs.
I mean, now I can think of as the Venture Time thing where it's like, they're an insectoid race. But you know, you make some really good points. I love continuity. I am a total continuity nut. I can absolutely see, you know, not wanting to violate a show's continuity. But at least for us, because we can, because there is no continuity in the aligned continuity that says there aren't female Transformers, I see no reason not to put them in. I think it costs us almost nothing, and it gives us a lot more. It makes us accessible to, you know, the human readership that we actually have. I think especially because, you know, the great thing about writing Transformers is that they really don't have gender in a lot of the ways that we think of gender. And so it really makes the female characters that are in Transformers just a lot more appealing for readers and writers as characters, because you can't just be someone's girlfriend or someone's love interest, because there are no girlfriends. And, you know, there are love interests, but there's no one has a mom. No one has a little sister. Like, you have to build someone who is competent on their own instead of just sort of being the girl. And that's what I really like about that. Especially, too, because we're able to have female characters who don't focus on their gender. For example, no one ever brings up Miko's gender. I think the only person that brings up gender in even a tangential way is a line Arachnid says about the Decepticons being a boys' club. But honestly, I think she's not really referring to that they don't like her because she's female. They just don't like her because she's a bounty hunter and she clearly isn't, you know, following lockstep with Megatron.
Right.
So it's just really nice to have female characters that they're just accepted, and that's, you know, they're part of the team like everyone else. They don't have to run around talking about how they're female characters all the time.
Well, I think it only creates more accessibility, you know, for the audience. You know, I always say, you know, nobody gives a crap about what giant robots from outer space would be like. What everyone wants to read about is what we would be like if we were giant robots from outer space. So the more like they us they are, the more interesting they are in some ways. With the interest, you know, the interesting part of them being giant robots is in the differences that would create in ourselves. It's not so much like a realistic, like they should be, you know, they're not androgynous, for instance. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, they, no, we don't refer to sexless, them as, technically we probably should refer to them as it, you know, it, they, and. Right.
But that's not how it, that's not how it is. You know, you read, you know, More Than Meets the Eye. It's a giant titanium sausage festival in space. They're dudes. They're all dudes. it's what it is. So, they can't get away with saying like, what? They don't have gender. I don't buy that. I think it's kind of offensive. Frankly, it's so in continuity or not. Either they need to adjust the continuity, say they were off panel, or they could cowboy up and apologize for being such dicks and just start having girls in the thing.
Speaking of which, are we gonna see any Chromia or Moonracer or Alita One or anything in the are we gonna see any more female Autobots?
Oh my gosh, that would seem like such a natural thing, wouldn't it?
Well, we've already got Firestar, and because we have Firestar, we now have to bring in Ironhide.
there's actually no plans for Ironhide. Thank you very much. Not right now. I try and avoid characters that are actually in the other comic lines, just because there are so many wonderful Transformers to play with.
Right.
But no, I will keep adding female characters and until someone makes me stop. And I make no apologies for that. It's obviously still the Dinobots, and when the Prime Cast joins up, it's the Prime Cast. They're the main characters, but you know, you can't tell because we didn't draw them with giant mechanical boobs, but when Grimlock talks to the people that confront him, half of those people are women.
Half? That's outrageous.
Like,
why would you make half of them girls? That just doesn't make any sense.
Because it doesn't matter. And we don't bring it up. You know, it's funny. We
where are you getting this number from?
I know. I heard someone say that technically the female population of the aligned continuity would likely be 13% because Solus Prime is one of the 13. So
I think some dorks just confuse the, you know, population ratio of their life to Cybertrons.
Yeah, but we, you know,
the people they know are girls.
Yeah, so. It's funny. I will keep adding. I don't see any problem with it, and no one else, my editor, doesn't see any problem with it, so we keep going. It's actually, the funniest thing was is that the only line we had in issue one of the miniseries that referenced Sir Cat's gender, we cut out because we realized we just didn't need it, and we didn't notice that we never referenced her gender, and then people were like, oh, is that a girl? Is that a guy? Like, and we were like, ah, crud. Like, we cut out the only line of dialogue that actually makes Sir Cat a she in the first issue. But it was kind of neat because it wasn't a big deal. It was just like a, you know, someone walked up and referred to her as ma'am, and I was like, ah, we don't need that bubble. And it just, you know,
well, it's never occurred to me. That's good. I mean, I think it's not the defining characteristic of that character. You didn't need to know it in the first issue. It was just wasn't presented as part of the, you know, it's just who she was.
Exactly. Yeah. The important things about Sir Cat are that she's fanatical to Shockwave, that she views the Dinobots as sort of the wayward children and or wayward siblings of the Forged, and that she turns into a giant dragon. Like, those are the most relevant points of her character.
Yeah, the pronoun is not exactly the point, you know. Yes.
Not at all. Are we, for me personally, outside of Grimlock, Snarl and Swoop are my two favorite Dinobots. Now, we've already seen in the first two issues a story with Snarl. Are we going to see more in depth as the series goes on? Like, are we going to have a Swoop-centric storyline or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I don't think this is going to spoil anything. You probably already get the sense. But basically, when Mike and I started, we wanted to start off sort of pairing off the characters a little bit, so issue 1 and 2 are Snarl and Sludge, and then issue 3 and 4 is going to be a very Grimlock and Swoop-heavy story, and then issue 5 and 6 are sort of all of them, but Slug really has the sort of core emotional story. Like, that's the one where I really wanted to shine a spotlight on Slug, so.
I don't care what Hasbro says. In the Transformers Prime universe, scrap is the new swear word. His name is Slag, damn it.
No, I'm with you. It's so cool. It's a metallogical term, but you know, you can't sell toys that are swear word in a bunch of countries. So I can't fault him for it.
Yeah.
Blame the British.
You know, yeah, I know.
That's right. Damn Brits.
Well, yeah. You know, I did an interview with the Underbass and they were like, why do you call him Slag? And I was like, that's your fault. Those guys are all in England.
I think I'd be more sympathetic if Hasbro would actually make a goddamn Slag toy.
Yeah.
Like, have that problem, please.
And, you know, and there have been plenty of, I remember in the old G1 days, there are plenty of G1 toys that never made it to the UK. So if you make a Slag SDCC exclusive, sell it just here in the States.
Yeah, but see, if they put out the Dinobots as a wide release, wouldn't you want the Triceratops to be there? Wouldn't you be sad if they couldn't do that because his name was a swear word in some countries? If you could only get him as an SDCC exclusive?
I'm of the opinion, and I know this might sound really off the wall here, but
oh dear,
whatever happens in the USA is what happens in the USA. To hell with other countries. I'm sorry. I don't care. If it's on sale here in the US, that's all that matters to me. You know, I mean,
this is not a shared problem.
I'm backing away from that statement. That statement does not represent my feelings nor the feelings of Hasbro or IDW.
Can I get in on that disclaimer?
Yes. We're all just going to back away slowly from that.
Seriously, it's like, you know, they're a U.S.-based company that, okay, sure, they market for kids, they market for us collectors to a lesser extent, and they market for all parts of the world, but, I mean, seriously, they're... Ender, wasn't there two different sets of Constructicons back in the old days? A green set and a yellow set, and the yellow set was only like four, like a
four. The yellow set was the G2 set, I thought.
Right, but
you mean before then? I don't know.
Wasn't there at some point a overseas exclusive like set of Transformers?
Well, it might have been the Diaclone ones or something. I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not versed in that.
My point here is Hasbro could make an SDCC exclusive set of the Dinobots for just us, and then make a less expensive mass produced ones that his name is different.
Dude, it'll be okay. I'll call him Slag with you.
And there are plenty of people, and I can X that out for you if you ever have me sign something. So I'll just change it for you. But no, I actually like anything that brings us to a wider audience, like global audience, and it's not like, you know, I mean, the Transformers land in Nevada. Like, it's not like there isn't enough American-centric things in American media. And I love American media, but I mean, like, look at G.I. Joe, even the ninja's a white guy. Like, so I think Transformers, as much as we can, gives a very particular nod to the States.
Yeah, can you imagine that, you know, writing these things and having it totally bent towards your gaze like nobody else exists? Who would do that? Aw.
So,
yeah, it's...
Maybe
yeah.
We'll do the Red Sun of Transformers and the Ark can crash in China or something and it'll all be Chinese-based.
Hey, so we received some incriminating pictures of you.
Oh, gosh, which ones?
You were leading some kind of insurgent rally at BotCon. Would you care to elaborate?
Oh, yes. Oh, good. I thought it was going to be the bullfight pictures.
I've heard of those, but I haven't seen them.
And never shall you. But no, I did. It's funny because I had this one thing that I've been seeing a lot of is the idea. I've been seeing a lot of protests online that there should be more female Transformer toys. And I've been seeing a lot of comments from other people saying, well, why? Because there aren't a lot of women who like Transformers, you know, and this is sort of an argument that's been happening over the internet. And
between boys.
Between people on both sides. And I thought, you know, one thing that I do hear a lot, even from women, is that Transformers is a guy's brand and girls don't like Transformers and girls don't read Transformers, so they feel like they can't be included. Like, essentially, we're actively excluding them. And so I thought that since we're at BotCon, and I kept looking around and being like, you know, there's so many women here. There's so many women here that, and this, the myth of Transformers is that women don't like Transformers. And so we sort of got it. I told my husband, I was like, wouldn't it be cool to get a picture with all the female fans? But, you know, of course, I don't want to do it. It'll disrupt everyone's day. No one will want to do it, you know. And he's like, no, you have to do it. And so he marches up with me to the PA system. And I'm just going to say, like, hey, I kind of, it'd be nice to have like a group picture or something. But by the end, it was sort of like a game of telephone. And by the end, it was like the announcement comes on that like the staff of Transformers Prime requests that all female fans report to the Hasbro booth for an official Hasbro photograph. And which Hasbro was very polite about, because it's actually just me. I thought it would be a cool idea. But yeah, we had like 50 women show up, and everyone, they were so happy to be acknowledged and to be there. And I think, you know, if you're a female trans, if you're a trans sister and people say that you don't exist, you know, and you want there to be more product for you, go take a picture of yourself holding the toys that you buy, you know, go take a picture of yourself holding the t-shirts that you own. Like, the only way to sort of convince people that women are here is to show them that we're here. And so we had that great photo, and we let, you know, BotCon know that there are lots of ladies who love Transformers and that we would, you know, we would like to be represented too. And I think that everyone I heard afterwards had a great time, thought it was a great idea. So we march onward.
Yes, that is so true. All right, so would you like to inform the fans of where they can interact with you online?
Yes. Yes, you can absolutely interact with me online. You can ask me anything. I might not answer, but I will answer everything I'm allowed to, and three things that I'm not allowed to. But you can find me on Twitter at Mairgrid Scott, MairGhread, 2 T's in Scott. And you can find me on Tumblr at mscottwrites, W-R-I-T-E-S, writes. And that's, I also do a Q&A thread on TFW 2005, TF World 2005. So you can reach out to me. I'm out there. Any questions, comments, complaints, no story ideas, please. The lawyers will kill me. But... But if you always have, you know, if you want to start that online petition to bring back Cosmos, let me know. I've got a list. I have two lists, though. People I like and the Transformers that they like, and people I don't like and the Transformers they like. So just be aware.
That's diabolical.
Wow. If you think about it, you could probably have Cosmos just, you know, orbiting Cybertron as the Dinobots are 6 feet underground.
Well, they just made a toy of him. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly. One step closer. Take your picture with that toy. That'll be your vote for Cosmos coming back.
We'd like to thank Mrs. God for taking time to chat with us on this interview inside the pull bag. We'll ask you to hold the line, and we'll be back after this.
Someone your own size?
What do you know? It does fetch.
Scrap!
Well, that didn't go exactly as planned.
That's because any first cycle cadet knows better than to detonate a grenade in a confined space.
Even if I intended the confined space to be the belly of the beast?
Sir? Your actions continue to be just one step removed from getting us all scrapped.
With all due respect, sir, the Predacon's loose, and Miko's out there alone.
Permission to provide cover, sir?
Go ahead. Make a wreck of her, as you no doubt did the wreckers.
Starscream, status report.
Master, we have secured the bone, and our Predacon is dealing with the Autobot's pet human as we speak. On my command, of course.
I will not risk losing a precious commodity to your arrogance.
I'll tear you apart!
Have the beast return with my prize immediately. You can stay behind and finish the Autobots.
Yes, Master. Assuming I can coerce the brainless brute into... What? You never obey my commands! You heard our master. We must locate the Autobots as soon as I retrieve what belongs to me. Even the strongest armor can't protect the weakest of creatures.
Protected you, didn't it?
It's, you know, it's funny, I have the same thing where, like, my husband and I love to play the Pokemon games together. And so we'll meet little kids, and they're just so happy that someone knows anything about Pokemon, and we're going on this conversation. It's like, no, these are actual things. Yeah, they're right. Charmander is the best one at that level.
Awesome.
But yeah, no, although the answer is Soundwave. Soundwave is the best Transformer.
Soundwave is awesome.
The hardest to write for.
Yeah. Because you can't write anything for him. Yeah. Soundwave stares and points that way. Soundwave points at his face with the... I wish that they would just friggin' give a vocoder to Frank and just let him do it. Seriously.
I want a little comic that just has, like, Bumblebee on one side talking to Soundwave, and I want Bumblebee to make a little raspberry noise at him. Just, and I want Soundwave to have a little, you know, emoticon sticking, you know, the colon and the P sticking back out at him. And then, like, R2-D2 in the corner with a little, like, you know, boop, 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 and a translation that says, you'll be hearing from our lawyers.
Did you hear the...
You could do, like, enough said kind of thing where it's just right. Bumblebee versus Soundwave for the whole issue.
Yeah. Ender, did you hear the RC interview I did?
No, I haven't had a chance.
Well, damn it. I don't.
I've been procreating. Give me a break.
I know. I'm gonna spoil it then because I actually asked Simile Montano how, in the script, like in the show, Bumblebee will do his beeps and then RC will say something back to him, and I'm like, how does that work in a voice session? Is it in English in the script that he actually says something and then they just insert the beeps? Does Frank Welker make the beeps?
Yeah.
How does that work? And she's like, let me pull out a script and find out for you.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, for the most part, there are a couple lines where we just write bleeps. But actually, for the most part, Bumblebee has dialogue in the script and Frank does dialogue in a special voice for Bumblebee. And then we record that so the actors can work off it. And it's also so the guys who insert the static can know, you know, what insert the bleeps can make them sort of sound like what he's supposed to be said.
See, okay, that's so interesting because I kind of just envisioned Frank Welker like doing little armpit farts at the microphone.
No, he actually does. It's really cute, too. He has a really cute Bumblebee voice and he does lines of dialogue awesome. Just like every other character.
Frank Welker is kind of godly.
So I just want to clarify, because this will be in an outtake. I just want to clarify, Bumblebee's noises on the show are a sound effect, and it's not Frank doing it, correct?
Yes. That's why he's not... Yeah, no. What happens is that Frank voices... he voices words.
Right, but when they put the final product together...
That is not Frank's voice. That is purely sound effect.
Frank's just being a good sport and doing that part.
Well, I mean, you know, he is compensated for that.
He's compensated for the... Oh, cool.
I buy it.
I thought maybe he was just like, I'll say that.
But, you know, just like the Insecticons, Bumblebee is sound effects. So actually most of the Insecticon noises are most of Predaking's noises when he's, I think all of Predaking's noises when he's in dragon form are just sound effects. And that like weird, like high pitched whinny scream the Insecticons have, also sound effects.
Wow.
So, which is funny because actually I almost never see the final product. Because since I work in production, I see the episodes so damn often. But the last version I see is the final, it's called Final Picture. So it's the final images and it's the final actor audio that I make for the closed captioning script. And, but I never hear it with music or sound effects. So yeah, like I came home one night and my husband was like, what's that weird sound the Insecticons make? And I'm like, what are you talking about?
So you like you make the closed captioning script and you do all this editing and you find out all the little nitpicky things they need to know to make sure it works and make sure
everything's legal. Yeah, and all the legal things and if there's a sign in the background that says something.
You just like keep the whole show's shit together.
Basically, yeah. It's like it's tracking a lot of little things. It's like, oh crud, we've forgotten that episode that happened and so blah 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 blah, you know? Or like, hey, we want this line changed here. Who asked for that line change? Well, this person did. And you pull out the note. Change this line. We can't legally say that, so.
Yes. Yeah. We can't legally say the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Exactly. So, you know.
Bad Dark of the Moon joke.
Oh, yeah.
I can just see Ender scowling at me.
That's my skull, dude. It's just that way now.
But yeah, if people ask what a script coordinator is like, it's basically essentially being the eyes and ears of the story editor when the script moves into production. So that the story editor can focus on just making the best stories and making sure the story's appropriate. And then as a script coordinator, I'm the one sort of making sure that all the lines that we want to change got changed and that there's nothing in there that we thought we could say that we can't say. And, you know, little things like getting the designs really quickly to them. And it's like, could Soundwave fit through this? Oh, so like, you know, that there's one episode early on in the first, whatchamacallit?
Season.
First season, like, but like the first five-parter.
Oh, yeah.
Where they break into that satellite thing.
Yeah.
And like we had written that Soundwave had gotten into the building and then I was like, hey, look guys, like I pulled the size comps and Soundwave can't get through the door because of his arms. And so I was like, okay, well we'll put in like a skylight and that's how I'll crash in. So little things like that.
Did you always know how long the show was going to be? Like, was it always going to be 2.5 seasons or was there, you know, factors that.
Most shows naturally cap out at, you know, there's an old saying 55 and out.
Right.
So we didn't know, but that's normally when you are on an animation show, you figure that the best you're going to get is 55 around there.
Cool. So you just kind of operate on that premise anyway.
Exactly. Of course, on the other hand, too, is that there's always the saying that you don't hold anything back. Which is why we did Unicron at like the end of season one. Is like the worst thing you can do on a show is start holding stuff for season three, because you don't know if you'll get a season three, so you better throw it in now if you got a good idea.
Gotcha.
That's still the best outside of Transformers the movie. Obviously, that's still the best incarnation of Unicron. Like making it just it makes so much sense to me. Making the core of our planet the evilest thing in the galaxy. That's so cool.
It's pretty cool. I love when they pan out and you realize that it's just that one big eye.
Yeah, that's an awesome shot.
Yeah, I really like that he was like sort of not physical. You know, like he made those avatars, but it's not like Unicron. Because it's always weird that like Primus is a planet, but then like you'd see old pictures of Unicron and he, first of all, it's just weird for me to have like a giant dude just floating through space. No offense to Galactus.
Yeah, just thinking.
But like, then you're like, then you see him and sometimes he's really small and you're just like, why are you, wait, size comp. So of course, that's the one thing people always laugh at us about Prime is our, I admit our characters lose and gain quite a lot of mass as they transform.
Yeah.
I prefer that. I prefer a little cheating to make them look better. I thought, especially in some of the movie, like I thought Starscream looked ridiculous. You know, he looked like a giant chicken. It was like, really, it's okay. You can cheat. We won't notice. Just, you know.
Well, I think it's really cool because you get those really awesome awe shots. Where, like, I think one of the great things is that one of the reasons why I think people didn't like Miko is because we made the robots. We did a lot of great cinematography things where the robots are so big that it's like, this is really freaking dangerous. Like, there's no question that these things are really dangerous, that even the sort of lowliest Viacon will destroy, you know, any human opponent.
What's just said earlier, you know, it's like, she's not dumb, she has a death wish. That's not, you know, that's not true. These things are...
I just think a lot of the fans that don't like the humans in general, specifically the female humans, that they just don't care for. Like, there was so much hate for Sari. And early on, there was so much hate for Miko, and I approached it like it was a brand new show. I approached it like, oh, okay, what's this character going to be? And she's completely different from any other human female we've had in the cartoons here in the U.S. And I just enjoy it, and I think what makes it more enjoyable is the fact that the three of them are partnered up with three of the robots, and you have to create relationships that way.
Yeah, no, that's I really always liked that too. But you know, I mean, the great thing about Prime is there's something for everyone. So if you don't like the humans, then watch Thirst. You know, go hang out with the Naughty Con.
Yeah, that ending, holy crap!
I think Miko and like Sari are my favorite humans in the Transformers fiction at this point.
Yeah, that's true. She's not any worse than Spike was in G1.
Spike was much more annoying and was rarely written very convincingly, you know. So I feel, you know, and really what Miko and Sari really do best versus those other characters are actually integrated well into the story.
Yeah.
You know, they are there for a reason. Yeah. And, you know, Spike frequently was just, you know, background color or, you know, someone to you know, yell when something happened.
I liked him better when he grew up, honestly. But yeah.
Well, part of that is just, I mean, remember, we do have a lot of like BSNP constraints. Like you can only put a kid in so much danger. Frankly, I'm really surprised they ever let me write Hurt. But you know, yeah, I think we really did want to try and integrate the kids as much as possible. And Jack and Raph and Miko, they really do contribute, and that's always been nice, as opposed to having them just sort of be pets.
Right.
What, besides Miko,
you
who are your
identify with the audience now?
Yes, exactly.
Besides Miko, who are your favorite characters? Because I need to know for art purposes to add something to the image you. Because the way we do our podcast art for interviews is the way we do it is we take the person's, like, whatever image that they decide to send us for their personal self.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put, like, specifically for voice actors, we put, like, the characters they voiced. But obviously, since you're not a voice actor, what are the characters that you like?
Oh, man. I mean, I love Soundwave, but I think my favorite character that I tried a really long fight scene with Knockout. I freaking love Knockout. Okay. Like every other woman on the internet. He's so awesome. And Starscream's the best. Like, I like Miko, RC, and the Decepticons, and Ratchet.
Okay.
All the crotchety people.
All right.
Do you not play well with others? Margaret Scott likes you. Actually, the person I really love in season 3 is Wheeljack, because I love that. Oh, that he basically tells Ultra Magnus to shove it. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, he pretty much does.
We Decepticons now face our darkest hour.
Well, there you go, folks. That was our interview with Margaret Scott. I'm probably saying it wrong. I don't care. Whatever.
I'm not even going to try.
No, it was very, very awesome. And actually, just for some behind-the-scenes stuff.
She's so interesting, we couldn't stop interviewing her.
Yeah, no.
we recorded an additional 13 minutes after we actually finished the interview. It's absolutely, it was such a fun time. We focused a little more on the show than I wanted to, but at the same time, we asked her enough comic questions without allowing or having her go into spoilers. Cause honestly, I don't want to be spoiled on Beast Hunters, the comic. I don't. I mean, yeah, sure. I kind of egged the question on about, you know, what's going to happen once the show and the comic link up, but I didn't want to push it too far where she's like, yeah, I just can't say. But no, I think it's great that the show and the comic are going to link up. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I think the answer to our spoiler questions was like, it's Margrid. Yeah. That's how you say it. That's the answer to that question. Yeah. What's going to happen when they link up? It's Margrid. That's just a little, you know, up at the end there.
Yeah, but that's so... Yeah.
That's the answer. Need to know anything else?
Oh, God. I just don't have the power. So that has been the second. Good old Scotty. This has been the second comic writer interview we've done here in the pull bag, and it's just been awesome. It's just been so awesome talking to her, and as we said in the interview, first ever quote unquote paid Transformers female writer, and it's just awesome. And I think the difference is it's not so much that whether it's males or females, it's so much that her writing style is that to give the characters she's writing about character development and actually, like, that's, like I said in the interview, the greatest thing about what I've read with Rage of the Dinobots and now the new ongoing is that the Dinobots actually have character. They're not just me want to go fishing. Yeah. Why Grimlock not want to go fishing with Dinobots? Yeah. No,
Sludge and Snarl have personalities? Who knew? I thought they were background color.
Yeah. So that's it for this interview in the poll bag. I'm not sure what's coming up next for the podcast. I believe it's episode 23 and 24. I'm not sure what we're going to be doing, but I'm hoping to be bringing
more. We'll be epic. We're going to give away money. Probably not.
Okay, then. Good night, everybody.
Empurata.
Shut up, Ender Purata. Transform and roll out. We'll catch you next time.